Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name. Your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and now, Tom and Melissa are here with us, but I'm especially gratified that Tom is here with us.
Yes.
Because 2 weeks ago, amazingly, I don't know who's watching on video, but if you are, it's hard to believe that Tom had major surgery two weeks ago. And it's a long process of recuperation, but he's an Iron Man and he's doing the show tonight. And I mean, I hate to say this, but he looks great. You know, I mean, much better than he did before. They must have done something right, you know.
Better to look good than to feel good.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. And I hope all the listeners in sending over the next month or two some healing thoughts Tom's way, because, you know, he can use them, and we sure appreciate them. So thank you for being here, Tom. And of course, Melissa, I expected you here whether Tom could make it or not, but
I would be.
I know he's a trooper, so he was going to come no matter what. So.
Yeah.
Well, this is the show where we field your questions, or if you want to talk about some experiences that you've had, you can call us live. We'd love to hear from you. The number here is 888-627-6008. We had some people that already sent us some emails about personal experiences that they've had. And I already read the number, Tom. Tom's holding up a number for me. So that's great. But I'll need that again, because, you know, it's only been 15 years. I keep forgetting the number. So before we get to some questions or any callers, let me read, you know, some that came in. Marilyn writes, I love your show. My husband is a physician, and he's been a bit spiritual, but very left brain logical, not understandable as a physician, right? He's been going through some medical issues this year. Our beautiful daughter, Amy, passed 3 years ago at the age of 33. A few days before his birthday in January, he was sitting in our den reading the newspaper when he felt something on his left shoulder. He turned to look, and there was our daughter, kind of transparent, but definitely her, with her brown shoulder-length hair. He excitedly came to me and told me that he saw her. I said, of course, she came to you right before your birthday, knowing you've been going through so much.
Oh, I love that.
Yep.
You know, Bob, you're reminding me, I love watching, while I'm busy sewing my hugs from heaven, I'm watching investigative discovery television. I call it IDTV. And
yeah,
it's all true crime stories. And it's amazing how often when there's a death involved, that the person telling the story, because these are reenactments, then with some of the true people who experienced the crime. And in this one case, this woman spoke about her sister who had been murdered, and they hadn't solved it yet, but her sister appeared to her looking young, youthful, just as she had appeared in life, and assuring her sister that she was all right. And I'm always so touched when I hear those stories, like, yes, that's what we talk about all the time.
Exactly. And What I especially love is, as in, Marilyn's story about her husband and a daughter, is that they embraced, the visit and were excited by it because they knew that the daughter came out of love. Whereas some people get mixed in with all this fear nonsense, about and it kind of disrupts the process, So that's great. Let's take a call. We have Terry from California. Hello, Terry.
Yes, hello. Hello, and it's okay. I wasn't speaking clearly. It's Giselle. Giselle Terry.
Oh,
So
Giselle
Giselle
Terry.
is my
Okay.
first name.
All right. Welcome,
Yes, that's
Giselle.
fine.
Good.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's nice to be here. I'm fine sharing something now, and I'm fine also listening. So whatever you think is the best. Would you like me to tell you a little
Oh,
bit about what's going on for me?
sure. Please do.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had many experiences my whole life with people who have departed, but I have never ever experienced anything like what I am experiencing now every day, every night for 3 months with a spirit who comes to me. And my experience is completely physical. So it's a touch experience, not really like a, it's waves. I get like a wave massage. It could go on for a long time. I've had to learn to work with this spirit. And there are so many things. It's not just that. But I now feel that it could be my husband who passed away almost 2 years ago. It could be my husband. It could be that he's now my spirit guide. I'm able through binaural music, I'm now able to pull in feeling states that are very similar to what I experienced that night. I hope I'm explaining this clearly. It's just that I never thought. To me, this is my magic. This is my magic and my gift to know that my husband is still here, that we know that there are spirits, that there is contact from the other side, and that we do not die in the way that people have always said we do not. And this is my hands-on experience
How
of waves of
beautiful.
energy. Yeah.
Yeah, and how fortunate that you're able to experience this in a physical way, because your
Yes.
husband is manifesting with touch and presence, and not everybody gets to experience that. So
Yes.
I hope that continues for you.
I hope it does too. We have a relationship. I talk to him. I call him him. I talk to the spirit, and I'm even able to see. Not a distinct face, but I'm able to see energy in my room at night. I
Oh,
know
wow.
when it's there and when it's not. I have on tape, a videotape of the spirit moving my cheeks and my brain. Anyway, it's just profound for me, and I don't want to sensationalize it. It is profound, and I try to respect and honor the unbelievable magic of this experience. And
Wow.
I didn't know if other people have physical experiences. I've never had, this is my first time having this physical.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, many people
Thank
do
you.
have physical experiences, and for
Yeah.
some, they try to foster such, contact for long periods of time.
Yes.
And some people, it seems to come easier. You may be gifted intuitively and psychically, and it's you present an easier conduit for your loved one to come through. But
Yes.
this will continue
Yes.
to unfold, I suspect. So
Yes, you're doing
It
exactly
will.
the right thing. It's It's great what I heard you say, that you are honoring and respecting the spirit and are welcoming, and that's such a comfort. And I feel feel happy for you to be able to experience that.
And I'm happy you have us here to hear your story, because I'm sure you choose carefully who you might share this with.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. Yes, no, it's I have chosen carefully, and I've been looking for community, and I so appreciate your hearing this. So I'm continuing my relationship with my spirit, and thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing, and call in again and let us know how it's going. We'd love to hear about that contact.
Yes,
please.
Okay.
It.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Yes, you too.
Before the same person, Marilyn, who told us this other story about a daughter, she said another time, the day after her daughter's funeral, I was walking towards the laundry room in my house down the hallway, and suddenly coming out of the room on the right, where we have a small theater, and my husband always loves to be there, I see Amy walking through the open space, and I shouted, "Amy," and she disappeared. I was very alert, and there was no doubt she was there. She looked kind of dazed, and to this day, I'm not sure why that was. So just relating the fact that she also, not only did her husband see her daughter, but she saw her daughter. You know, as far as looking dazed, I mean, when people manifest themselves in physical form, very often it's not, you know, crystal clear. So it may seem a little filmy or haze-like, but I wouldn't read anything into it other than that's the way it is, you know, when somebody makes an appearance. I thank you for sharing that. We had some other experiences. We had some questions that came in as well. One question that came in said, do you think that there are some people in the spirit world who have no desire to communicate with the physical realm? And, you know, and if that's, you know, then the person is, why might that be the case? I don't know. I mean, that might explain why certain people in spirit never come through mediums or through their loved ones directly. What might be the reasons for that?
Right.
I don't know.
There's actually a lot of good reasons for it. The number one that I interjected is that they're having too much fun, number one. Number two, they understand the eternal space of time that they have and just how brief this life is. And they know that you're going to be together again very quickly. So they don't may not feel the need. And then I guess there was a third there somewhere with my medicated mind is.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, I agree with everything you said. Plus the fact that, don't you think that sometimes, we know there's advancement on the other side. So, yes. You know, maybe some people move towards enlightenment very quickly, you know, and the kind of, you know, many dimensions, you know, off. And so it's just not important, as Tom said. And also, probably takes a lot of effort to move from a real high realm to a dense realm, right?
Oh, and I remember my third one was, is that I the more I hear about this and read about it and study it, I get the feeling that, and people always say, well, you know, you're here for a purpose, and that this physical realm is kind of a test for your soul, but you're put into the physical, you're put into situations, and how you handle it will determine the advancement of your soul. And so it's kind of like when you come to the earth, you're taking an exam, and your loved ones who are on the other side can look over your shoulder and they see the exam And they know the answers. They're like, you know that this is the answer. And yet they realize if they give you the answer, it negates the value of you learning the lesson. So I think maybe another reason that they don't communicate is they say, look, this is your test. You take it, and we'll see each other on the other side.
That's kind of like being a parent, you know,
Like
it's
they're so
guidance.
no, they don't want us to cheat, in other words, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mariah writes, I was wondering if you could share any experiences you might have with seeing people or animals in your peripheral view, and then when you go to look, they're gone. This is happening more and more to me lately. I'm not sure how to work with the experience, so that possibly when I go to look at them straight on, they don't leave. Examples, I see cats all the time. Then when I go to check it out, it's not there. Or babies crying, or little kids following behind me or watching me, or men hanging out in the shade. And then when I go to focus on them, they're gone. It's never a scary or low vibration energy I'm picking up on, more like a playful, curious energy. I don't know, it doesn't it makes a certain amount of sense to me. The way I see it is people always have this sense of presence, and it's sort of like seeing between the dots, that they're like seeing beyond our physical realm, but then when they're catching fleeting glimpses of it, but then when they focus on it, it kind of breaks that connection. They're no longer seeing between the dots, and they're back connected to the physical world. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's the way I see it. I mean, if you, it's not the first time that I've heard of people seeing things out of a peripheral vision. I mean, first we have to rule out the physical issue. I mean, it could be a vision, problem, but more likely it is spirit. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? Or do you ever see things out of the corner of your eye?
Say
Do
that
you
I do.
focus?
As you read that, you know, I was almost thinking Mariah might be, you know, a budding medium or having those abilities and has to hone her skills in order to bring them fully present for her and maybe gifted with connection to animals. I don't recall ever having that sense. Do you, Tom?
Oh, I have the corner of the eye, looked and seen, thinking I saw something and not. It never manifested it into anything, and I don't have a lot of clairvoyance or whatever, so I haven't explored it any further.
Yeah. All right. We had somebody wrote in an experience. My wife's grandmother was born in 1899, and my wife remembers as a small child sitting with her grandmother as she would go through and catalog the dimes she had collected. My wife is not one who likes to visit cemeteries, and since her grandmother passed in 1999, she's only visited her gravesite one time, which was several years after her grandmother passed. A couple of days after that visit, my wife was going through some change and asked me to look at a coin she had found. There in her hand was a dime with the clearly visible date of 1899,
Wow.
a coin more than 100 years old, found in my wife's pocket change with a clearly visible date. That date being the birth year of my wife's grandmother, and this occurring shortly after visiting her grandmother's grave. And
That's
he writes
pretty
down
cool.
coincidence, exclamation point.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things that we think not, that was a synchronicity organized by spirit, as we would see it, right?
Yeah.
I think we better keep checking our change. I don't recall the last time I was looking at dates unless I saw something really shiny and thought, how newly minted is this? But I forgot about the old coins. My mother used to love to go through the old coins. They were significant.
Yeah,
How cool is that?
I know. Yeah, I used to go through, I mean, coins when I used to collect coins on a regular basis, but It's rare that you come across a coin that's 100 years old and still in circulation. And usually when you find those, you can't read the date, you know, from wear and tear. You know, it's all smudged down. This same person had another experience. My wife and I are close to a family originally from Italy. I have known them and their son Sam for over 40 years. Sam's father, Rolando, had passed away several months previously, and we were over Sam's for dinner. My wife comes to me with a purse, opens it, and shows me a kiwi inside. Now, as a rule, my wife and I eat fruits and vegetables, but we don't buy or eat kiwis. My wife asked me if I had put this in a purse as a joke, which I hadn't. We then figured Sam was playing some kind of a joke, but he swore up and down that he hadn't put the kiwi in my wife's purse. So he did, however, share with us that kiwi was his father's favorite fruit. And to this day, we have no idea how the kiwi got in my wife's purse.
You know, I love that.
That's something you don't hear every day. I've never seen anybody with a kiwi in their purse in my life.
So, oh, that's a wonderful story.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. We had a question. How do people in the next life communicate amongst themselves?
By
telepathically.
Okay, well, that's the short answer, right? Telepathically, you know. They communicate, they're entities of thought. They all communicate by thought, which I always wondered about. So if you could hear every thought of every person,
yeah.
But then again, there's no incentive to have any bad thoughts, right? I mean, you can't hide anything from anybody. You're an open book. So that may explain why things are much better on the other side, right? There's no ego, there's no greed, there's no material stuff, you know.
No deception.
Yeah. And that's how people communicate with us in the physical realm the same way, by thought. You know, they don't have a body, but we do, and that's how mediums do what they do. Here was a question about pets. If you and your pet both die at different times, are you reunited in the afterlife?
I believe yes.
I totally believe you do. Yes.
In fact, we were doing the Forever Family Foundation was doing an event at one of the local colleges, and I was sitting out in the hallway at the merch table, and one of the janitors came over, and he knew what we were doing there, and he says, "Can I tell you a story?" And he was talking about how he and his dad were sitting on a porch, and this particular guy dropped dead on the porch.
The janitor?
Yeah, lost consciousness. And the very first thing that he saw when he woke up's the wrong word.
Gained awareness?
He gained awareness of where, that he was somewhere. And it was beautiful and all that. And clearly he was having a near-death experience. But the first thing he remembered was his childhood dog, Pat, came running over to him, and they embraced and all that. And he was just so filled with joy and love. And then the next thing he remembers is his father, who was shaking him and brought him back to the physical world. And his reaction was, what'd you do that for? That was great over there. We get that a lot with the near-death experiences, that people don't want to come back necessarily.
And that they see their pets.
And they see their loved ones. They see their pets. I think it's, and the key word is love. Anyone or any thing that you, a thing being pets, that you loved in life, you will see again. And simply by that connection, the connection of love will bring you together.
So we believe If you had a question, you'd like to share something with us, number here is 888-627-6008. Wow, amazing how I remembered that, right, Tom? Okay. So we have, let's see. Can a medium communicate with someone who is in a coma?
Oh, I remember reading a wonderful book, an experience, and I was thinking of this the other day. I'll have to look for it on my bookshelf. A woman had contacted a medium while her husband was in a coma, and the medium was able to convey to her all of these thoughts. Now, there's no perfect way of proving it, although many of the details were things that the wife could identify as being things they had talked about or issues they were dealing with. And it went as far as to what he wanted done when his body ultimately did die and the kind of service he wanted. I'll have to look for that and share it in a future program. But this book was amazing, and it really, gives you something to think about how nice that would be for some individuals to be able to
Yeah.
communicate.
And we hear a lot about that's why even doctors will say, talk to your loved ones while they're in a coma because they can hear you. And so
And you have that story. You have that story about your son.
yeah. But I was thinking, so a medium could be talking to somebody, could be using their psychic ability, reading the person's mind that's in a coma, but they could also be using their mediumistic ability because a person in a coma, especially if they're near death, is straddling two worlds, right?
I
So
think
as
so, yeah.
they're with one foot in the next world, it's really mediumship that's taken place, right? So that may be a reason that mediums can, speak to, that are in comas.
And I think that if we are in a coma, you're free from your conscious mind, which can get in the way of spiritual communication a lot of the time. So I fully think that that is possible. When my dad passed, he had a massive stroke. He was in Manhattan at a hospital, and he was not conscious. And I did spend time with him, and I talked to him and told him that I would take care of his wife while he was gone, and that it was okay for him to go. And of course, everybody said, "Well, he can't hear you," but his. And then there were a couple of times when he would move when I would say something, and they said, "Well, he's just having a spasm." But again, it was just too coincidental that what I said elicited the response. That's number one, that I'm pretty darn sure he heard what I was saying. When it became clear that he was not going to recover, and he had a living will, which his wishes were not to be kept alive by extraordinary means. And we basically pulled the plug, as they say. And then he was to be moved to a hospice, which was in the hospital was in New York City. We live halfway out on the island, and then all the way out on the island, Port Jefferson was where the hospice was. And the night that he, the evening that we knew he was being moved to the hospice, we, my brother and a few friends, and that were having dinner in our house, and right almost exactly the time that ambulance would have been taking him from the city passing by our town, my car alarm went off, and there wasn't anybody out there, and it just didn't seem there was any other explanation that here he was still physically alive, and yet I think he was sending out signals already.
What was the story, Tom, the unfortunate, where you had requested that the hospice center not phone your mother?
Oh yeah, that was yeah,
Do you read?
we had asked the people at the hospice to call us instead of calling my mother, because I didn't want her to be alone when she got the news.
That he had ultimately
Yeah,
passed.
when he had passed. And I think what precipitated it is we had, I guess it was a, he went out to Port Jeff. He was wasting away quite literally, and you know, we had all said our goodbyes to him in the hospital in the city, and we didn't really want to go and see him, you know, in a, any further along in his deterioration.
And your mother needed to be kept company here and not there.
Right, so we had said, well, you know, we're not going to go out there. But then after a few days, we thought to ourselves, I mean, my mom and us had the same idea at the same time of, yeah, I think we should go and see him, make sure he's comfortable or whatever, and just to see him one more time. So we had made up our mind that we were going to go out to the hospice the next day. And, my mom had come home from going to church and went to call somebody, and the phone wasn't, she wasn't getting a dial tone. And that was kind of strange. And so she went around the house and couldn't understand why she wasn't getting a dial tone. But then she went into my father's office that nobody had been in for weeks, and the phone was off the hook. And so she put the phone on the hook, the phone rang, and it was the hospice telling her that he had passed. So I think my dad was trying everything he could to spare her that phone call, but there it was. So we definitely felt that that was a, fortunately, I lived about 3 to 4 minutes from her house. So when she called me up right away, and I just zipped over to the house so I could be with her. But that was a phone call. Yeah, she was so distraught. And I got into my car,
Oh
turned
no.
it on, went to rush for my to over to my mom, and the radio was playing Mary Wells, "Nothing You Can Say Can Take Me Away From My Guy." I thought, yep, there you go.
Yeah,
So,
but you're getting all sorts of stuff right off the bat. What Melissa was referring to before is my own personal proof that people could hear you when you're in a coma, because when my kids were in that car accident and my son was in a coma, and we would sit with them kind of round the clock waiting for him to wake up. And the father of his girlfriend at the time was very fond of my son, and he would spend virtually like the entire night, which is sitting there telling him story after story after story after story, and talking about this and that and baseball. Meanwhile, he's in a coma, right? And
yeah.
then eventually he comes out of the coma, he opens his eyes, he sees his girlfriend's father, and the first words were, "You are the biggest pain in the ass." It's like, don't you ever shut up.
Oh, very
Everybody laughed because, you know, it was like music to our ears. We were just so excited he woke up. But so he heard all the stories, you know, for days, you know. It's like,
oh.
you know, so that's
That's wonderful.
nobody's going to tell me that you can't hear when you're in a
You
coma.
know, there is another connection with my dad, a new story. I've been telling these other stories a lot, but this, you referred to at the beginning of the program that I went through a medical procedure. And there was, it was no, there was nothing indicating that I needed anything like this. I went for my annual physical with my primary care doctor, who happens to be a cardiologist. And she said, "You know, you're getting a little older. Well, I'd like to run a bunch of tests." And one of the tests they ran was a nuclear stress test. And when she got the results back, she called me to tell me that there was blockage in my vessels around my heart. And the day that she called me was my dad's birthday. And then, so she scheduled one of these where they put the catheter up and technically,
Angiogram,
yeah, and you know, say, well, they'll do an angioplasty or a stent or something like that. And that was scheduled for a Wednesday, the next following Wednesday. And the Thursday night was the last night that we were home before we went in for this procedure. And Melissa and I are walking down the hallway, and as soon as we went under the light at, on the hall, the light flashed, and we both looked at each other, going, "Did you see that?" Yeah. Now,
you see that flash over
yeah.
there?
This is an interesting thing because I knew it was my dad, but was he telling me, "See you soon"? Or was he telling me, "I got this"? I don't know, you know. So I was, I kind of resigned myself that this could be my last day on Earth, and I wrote letters to my grandchildren and things like that, and told Melissa that anything happens, deliver these. And so I was, and because of our all we've done with the foundation, I wasn't afraid. You know, I didn't want to leave everybody, but I knew that if I did leave, it wouldn't be bad for me necessarily. But yeah, so but then I flash a light, and I'm thinking, well, does that? And then I say to myself, well, if I really was about to actually die, he probably would appear to me, you know, one of the deathbed visions or something. But so the next day, I went in for that procedure. And the guy went up and he took a look and came back and said, "Well, you know, you have 97% blockage in the vessel that they call the widow maker." And so they said, "You know, we got to get you into New York City to Mount Sinai Hospital, which is where my father had his last days." And they put me in a hospital wagon and put me there on Wednesday night, and then on Thursday they operated. And and the doctor who did the operation said when he got me on the table and open, that blockage was 100%. So had I not gone for the physical, had I not gone for you know, the extra tests, that I probably wouldn't be here talking to you guys,
Yeah,
not
well,
physically.
it's true. I mean, you don't know, what thoughts are put in our heads and by whom, but sometimes they wind up, saving our lives. Yeah, that's interesting that you saw the flash of the other thing. You could have thought is like your life was flashing before your eyes, but listen, I know. Obviously, we've been doing this work for 20 years. I mean, we all firmly believe, that there's another place that we go. But when faced with the reality, emotions take over. I mean, I don't know how you could be totally calm about undergoing something like that. But you know.
I tell you, I have, and this isn't the first time I had surgery on a, I had a colonoscopy that got went bad, and I had My intestines were septic, and that was another thing. I was turning green, and had I not acted quicker, that could have been it. But I do remember that I was on the table being wheeled into the OR, and I just thought of, I surrounded myself with the white light, and I had no fear. I the only fear, again, that I was leaving behind my family in that, but I had no fear for myself. I had no fear 2 weeks ago for this. I just said, well, okay, here we go. We're doing this.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's a great attitude. And, you know, God forbid the results were different, you'd still do the show from the other side.
That's right.
You're not getting out of it that quick.
We have a little agreement amongst the three of us, right?
That's right.
One of us goes over, we're all still meeting here.
You know, I think I told you the story once when I was going in for anesthesia for a surgery, and I was talking with all the nurses, you know, and they want to keep you calm. And I wasn't nervous at all, but I was, the nurses were really interested in the subject, and the anesthesiologist came over, and we're talking about this and talking about NDEs and, you know, near-death experiences and so forth. And then all the nurses leave, and I grabbed the anesthesiologist and said, let me just point something out to you. I know I made the NDE sound like really, really good, but it's my preference. I don't have one today. So, you know, it's like, so she laughed. All right. So before we run out of time, let's take another call. We have Tim on the line. Tim from Pittsburgh. Hello, Tim.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. So I was the individual who wrote in about my wife's grandmother with the 1899 coin and the family that I know from Italy. And the discussion that you had, I actually had included a couple other items. So, Bob, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to read one of these items that I also had written in on. In part because your discussion was talking about folks in coma who hadn't gone into the afterlife, but, you know, that we're maybe bigger than we even realize, and we have abilities and things that we don't even understand. That was number one. And then number two, the gentleman that was just talking, I grew up in North Massapequa, even though I live in Pittsburgh, and my guess is that he must have been close to North Massapequa because he's talking about halfway between Port Jeff and the city. And that would be close to where I grew up. So I thought, you know what? Something's telling me that I should call in and give this a shot.
Yeah.
So,
I lived 10 years in Massapequa Park.
There you go. See? See? So we both have the New York accent. And I've lived here in Pittsburgh for over 40 years, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So let me tell you this. And this was a church, actually, I'm going to refer to that was in Seaford. A Catholic church, but I'll read what I wrote in. I said, I had known my friend Chris since elementary school. I also knew his parents, and our parents were mutual friends. Another friend of ours was getting married, and I'd been asked to sing at his wedding.
Ooh.
Chris's father would be at the ceremony, but several years previously had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I was standing on one side of the altar while my wife and friends, including Chris's father, were on the other side of the church. I was getting ready to sing the wedding song by Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, Paul Stuckey. Yeah.
I looked over in their direction. I couldn't see the faces of anybody I knew, except I had an absolutely clear path to seeing Chris's father, which was quite remarkable with all of the people in between. But there was this narrow, clear path looking right at him. I thought it was a bit strange, given the number of people there. But then I also noticed he was staring directly at me from across the church. Additionally, his face appeared to be glowing. It's a very hard thing to describe. It wasn't like a light turned on because the light will spread out from the light. It was that his face was simply glowing. I checked the window near him. It definitely wasn't coming from them. It was his face, and it was glowing. So I thought, okay, well, you know, this is a little interesting, right? And I didn't think anything of it other than this is a bit strange. I then turned, and this is This is a matter of 10 seconds. All this occurred 10 seconds before I was ready to start singing. And then I heard what sounded like a loud shout. And it came from up and to the left side of my head. And the words were, "I'm still here."
Ooh.
And I felt it was coming from Chris's dad. It wasn't his voice. It was just a thought. But it was super loud. And I looked at the congregation because I thought, maybe somebody else heard this. You know, maybe somebody's yelling something. And no one reacted. So now I'm literally just a few seconds away from needing to sing. My first thought is, I can't deal with this now. I've got to sing. I've got to focus on singing. My next thought, like a millisecond later, was, wait a second, what the hell just happened? And I looked down at the organist, who by this point is repeating the first measure, sort of vamping through that, nodding, you know, start singing. And she hadn't heard anything. And I turned to face the congregation. And in my mind, why did this happen? Which had totally upset my frame of mind and my focus on what's there. And how did it happen? And so I start singing the first couple of lines from the wedding song. And the first couple is, "He is now to be among you at the calling of your hearts. Rest assured, this troubadour is acting on his part." And I thought, well, this kind of partially answers both my questions. I continue singing. "The union of your spirits here has caused them to remain, for whenever two or more of you are gathered in his name, there is love." And that kind of answered both of those questions and completed it. And, you know, I wrote here, I know this sounds like a work of fiction, but it really happened to me. I'm not psychic or anything like that. Nothing like this has ever happened before or since, but I offer this as something to say, maybe even in this world, we might be greater than we think or even realize we are.
Absolutely.
Fantastic story. Wow.
And especially when you're dealing with music. Music is a great conduit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, Tim, I'm so glad you called in to share that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tim. I appreciate you sharing all your stories with us. And I know there's more, so keep sending them in.
please.
Okay, will do.
All right.
Thanks.
Take
Good
care.
Talking to you folks.
Same here.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Chris.
Bye-bye.
All right, we don't have much time, but let's get a quick caller, and we have Amel from Ohio.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking the call. So I had a question. I was wondering when we cross over, the person has crossed over, the soul or the spirit, do they have any feelings like we do when we are in the human body, or do they just remember things like a machine and without any feelings?
Well, I'll jump in on that. The one feeling that is prevalent and very strong is the feeling of love and joy that we've gotten that reported back to us from NDEs and from mediums. So, yeah. Those kind of feelings. I don't think that they have, they certainly don't have anger or sorrow or things like that, but they do have a sense of love and joy.
And it's thought that personality and many memories do survive physical death. So personalities may survive, but of course, they have a different perspective when they're in the next world. You know, they don't think of things the same way that they did before. So, yeah, I don't think it's like a data bank where they're just extracting facts and then spitting them back. I think they do have personality, they do have memories, but they just don't think in physical terms anymore.
Yeah, and that.
So do they? Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, so I was going to say, do they remember everything which happened in this past life?
Well, they certainly remember a lot. We know that because that's what they communicate through mediums and through other sources. But I don't think that they remember every detail. Hey, look, I don't remember a lot now, you know. Yeah. So why should I think that I remember everything when I go to this next dimension? So I think they remember the moments that are important, as Tom mentioned, you know, filled with love and compassion. And they do remember what seems like minute details, because they want to communicate those to you so that you'll know that they still exist. Only you would know these minute details. So they remember a lot. A lot stays with them. But I think that also, as time moves on, at least time as we know it, you know, when they progress and possibly move on to other frequencies, those physical memories lessen, which may explain why communication gets less frequent, you know, as people move on, you know, and you know, the time.
And when Bob mentioned that personality remains, that so you can tell who the person is, in the back of your head, you go, well, what about the personality of somebody who is a horrible, abusive, evil person? You know, and then now you're telling me it's all about love. Well, I'll tell you, we get so many medium readings where that kind of horrible, abusive person comes through in the reading, and the sitter is going, I don't want to hear from that guy. He was a you know, terrible person. The reason the guy is coming through to the medium is to apologize, because they see how badly they behave. They feel the pain that they inflicted on other people while they were here. So it's a healing process when you get over there.
You know, I was just going to say, when we first cross over, so much of the personality is still perhaps still intact. And when we have a lot of folks say, why aren't I hearing from them as often? The evolution of the spirit may take away some of those human interactions, memories, and they've evolved, as Bob had mentioned earlier, you know, to a higher realm where now they're sort of separating from that physical experience that included some of those memories.
So just a follow-up question then. My wife is on the other side now. So I have contacted through a medium and, you know, got messages. And so when she's sending messages through the medium, does she have the same feeling for me like she had when she was in the body?
I would say yes, and intensified. So the love she had for you is stronger, if that's possible, now that she's on the other side.
Love never dies.
That's right. That feeling of love is always going to be there, that bond you have.
Okay, great.
That's what connects you. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Be well.
Have a good night. Okay. Well, we don't really have any time for any other calls. We only have a minute or two. I mean, there was one interesting question that I saw that came in. Is there any gender in the afterlife? I haven't really thought about that.
That's a good question.
You know, so on the one hand, my first reaction would be, well, there's no gender with an entity of thought, and, you know, there's no reason for any gender. It's not like we're going to reproduce, you know. But on the other hand, you know, they're giving information through mediums and they remember the gender that they had. So that's more of a factual thing, right?
Yeah. That's an evidential thing. That when spirit connects with a medium, they want the loved one to know it's them. So they will appear as they are remembered. And then, you know, invariably a medium will say, well, I have a woman here that's trying to speak to you. And that's just for evidential readings. I totally agree that once you're pure energy, gender is meaningless.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this will be a combination of global peace prayer and prayer for Tom. So what does this one consciousness give our energy of loving thoughts by praying like this? To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
Oh, and now it's time for me to say, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Thank you, everybody. That's a wrap. And Tom, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
I want progress reports.
Yes, yes, me too.
I know that Melissa's doing a great job.
She's fantastic, really fantastic. Yeah.
Well, you knew she would, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.